Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Average black male, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male, and the people don't never get justice.
Is there justice in the criminal justice system? The answer, according to that song, is no. That's from the hip-hop group Dead Prez. That was a song off their album Let's Get Free. And next, in light of the Riverdale bomb plot case and Sonia Sotomayor's nomination to the Supreme Court, we explore possible reactions to that with Paul Butler. He is a former federal prosecutor, a law professor at George Washington University, and the author of a new book titled Let's Get Free, A Hip-Hop Theory of Justice. This includes a proposal for what he calls jury nullification in more cases than it's usually applied in. So the next time you're summoned to jury duty, think twice about the law you're being read. Depending on the circumstances, you might consider looking past the evidence. Paul Butler, welcome to WNYC.
It's great to be here, Brian.
Now, as a federal prosecutor, you came to view the criminal justice system as broken. How so, most of all?
Well, you know, I spent my days locking up low-income African-American and Latino people for mainly nonviolent drug offenses. Like a lot of prosecutors, that's pretty much all I did. And so I started to wonder, you know, did I go to Harvard Law School to put poor people in prison? And certainly some of the people who I prosecuted belonged in jail, but there were a whole lot who don't. And right now we've got about 500,000 people in the United States in prison. We got 5% of the world's population, 25% of its prisoners. So there's something wrong with that, Brian. It's wrong economically, and it's also wrong morally.
What is jury nullification, and where does it come in for you to the response to that pattern?
So jury nullification is the idea that jurors have the power to judge the law as well as the facts. If they don't think the law is fair, so they don't have to apply it. The classic example is when it was a crime to help a slave run away. And northern jurors, who were almost exclusively white men, would nullify, they would acquit people who were charged with this crime of helping free a slave because they thought that the law was unfair. The Supreme Court's reviewed this power. It's always affirmed it. It's always said it's a power that jurors have under the Constitution, so it's perfectly legal. So what I suggest, Brian, is in cases now, especially nonviolent drug cases, jurors think about whether sending some young person to prison, locking them up with all these violent rapists and murderers, is really the smart thing to do. So a classic example in New York would be marijuana. You guys arrest 40,000 people a year for marijuana possession offenses. 40,000, Brian. I don't even know if you can afford that these days. So if a juror gets a case like that, again, think, is prison, is prosecution, is spending all this money to lock this person up, is that really the best use of the government's resources?
I want to get your reaction as somebody who's been on the front lines in the way that you have to the news of this Riverdale bomb plot case and the particular piece of it that at least some of those defendants met in prison. Does that surprise you? And can you put that in some kind of a context for us?
Oh, unfortunately, it doesn't surprise me. You know, one of these people who's accused was a kind of classic nonviolent drug offender who gets a relatively strict sentence for something that in Europe he probably wouldn't even go to prison for. You know, any parent who's had this concern about letting your child play with the bad kids understands what happens when you take a nonviolent drug offender and lock him up with all of these really dangerous people. And when you multiply that, Brian, by what's happening in the African-American and Latino communities, where you have one out of three young black men who's got a criminal case, you get a lot of anger against the government, against the state, because it seems like the government is responding to problems of employment and lousy educations by locking people up. So you breathe this resentment. And then what happens is you lock these people up with these kind of subversive, violent elements, and we can't really expect anything good to come out of this.
Though I'm sure there are a lot of listeners thinking right now, no, they don't lock up poor people or unemployed people on that basis. They lock people up if they've committed crimes. And if you take the marijuana arrest case out of the equation, because maybe that's starting to be viewed as a special case in society now, that maybe is over the top, people who have committed crimes of drug dealing or harder drug possession or gun crimes and whatever, if you start talking about jury nullification and not locking people up on the basis of concerns for communities rather than standards under the law, then we're going down a slippery slope toward ruin. What would you say to people who are having that reaction?
I'd say, Brian, that I wrote part of that book in Washington Heights, where they still have open-air drug markets, including during the height of the Rockefeller laws, you know, these very punitive drug laws in New York. So it's clear that the lock them up and throw away the key approach just doesn't work. It doesn't make communities safer. It costs too much. It's the least effective way to get drug dealers off of the street. So I'm with you in terms of wanting safe communities. It's clear, though, that this very punitive, lock everybody up approach doesn't work. In order to send this message to politicians and in order to safely keep some people out of prison who don't belong there, jurors ought to be thoughtful about how they use their power to convict people.
When shouldn't a jury nullify?
In any case of violence, in any case with the victim. So if we're talking about a theft, from a chain snatching to a more violent crime, jurors should convict if they are persuaded beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant is guilty. So it's something that I recommend they only consider in cases of nonviolent drug offenses, and these are transactions between consenting adults.
A listener on our website writes, "My understanding is that judges can also override poor jury decisions, therefore thereby nullifying jury nullification." Is this true?
It's true in the sense that if there's a conviction and there's not evidence to support the conviction, the judge can overturn that conviction. She can't, however, overturn an acquittal, and that's where the power to nullify comes. But your listener is exactly right. There are all kinds of people who have all kinds of discretion in the criminal justice system. Everybody's been subject to a police officer who knew that you committed a traffic offense but didn't give you a ticket. Or a cop sees a kid in a car smoking a joint. The cop says, throw away the joint, but doesn't arrest the person. So there are all these actors in the criminal justice system who have all this discretion. They often use it not to lock people up. So all I'm suggesting is that jurors be thoughtful about how they use their discretion. Just because someone's guilty doesn't mean they have to convict.
Senator Jim Webb of Virginia, as you may know, has emerged as an advocate of a total overhaul of the criminal justice system, which he has called a national disgrace. In March, Senator Webb introduced legislation for a bipartisan 18-month review of the entire criminal justice system. And I wonder if you're familiar with what he's aiming at, and to the extent that you could be a voice heard in that discussion, what are the most pressing items that such a commission should look into?
Well, the most pressing, I think, is the number of people who are locked up for nonviolent offenses, mainly drug offenses. Again, 500,000 people cost $60,000 a year per inmate. So just on an economic level, Brian, we simply can't afford to be that punitive, especially when it doesn't give us any public safety benefits. It actually increases crime. In New York, you guys actually reduce crime at the same time as you reduce the number of people in prison, and that we can replicate that all over the country. And other than that, you know, we can reduce sentences overall. We lock up people for every crime way more than they do in Western Europe, and they're just as safe, if not safer, walking down the streets of Piccadilly Square as you are in Times Square. So, again, this very harsh approach just doesn't work.
You consider drug sales a nonviolent crime, same as drug possession?
Between consenting adults, yes. Again, if someone's selling drugs to children, then it makes sense, I think, to lock that person up. Again, I'm not crazy about drugs, Brian. That's not the issue. The issue is what makes streets safer, what's good for the economy, what's the morally right thing to do. And when we consider it from all those approaches, it's clear that putting people in a box for 15 or 20 years just isn't the way to go.
In our last 30 seconds, so many people are talking about Judge Sotomayor's nomination as somewhat of an identity thing. And, you know, even hearkening to her own statement from 2001 that somebody who's a wise Latina comes with a certain rich diversity of experience that a lot of white men might not have. Do you think that would be relevant to the kinds of things you're talking about here, to have someone like that on the Supreme Court? And we have 30 seconds.
Yeah, absolutely, Brian. As a Latina, somebody who grew up in the South Bronx, you can't have, first of all, this very benign view that the police are always your friends, that the police always are going to do the right thing and acting in the community interest. So the Supreme Court certainly needs that perspective. And statistically, as a Hispanic woman from the South Bronx, she knows people who've been involved in the criminal justice system. So she's going to have a, I think, more compassionate view about the rights of accused people.
Or maybe just a more informed view, you also seem to be saying.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Paul Butler, George Washington University law professor, author now of Let's Get Free, A Hip-Hop Theory of Justice. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.